fight Jake Coleman. Welcome, everyone, to the completely unnecessary podcast for April 27th, Tuesday, 2021. That's compadre Ian Ferguson.
I'm right here.
I am El Jefe, Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be talking about Castlevania Dreamcast getting dumped. A retro gaming GameStop update, maybe? The Evercade versus console. And then we'll have a Patreon poll topic and also some voice messages. Ian, how was your weekend?
It was good.
Your life is good, like Kevin Kubicheski from You Can't Do That on Television?
No, not.
He always said, good, my life is good.
Oh, well, that's good.
Shout out to Kevin Kubicheski out there in Canada.
Kevin Kubicheski. Life is wonderful. I've been catching up on some of the food TV shows on Netflix that I watched. Did you watch any of the street food on Netflix?
No, is it a street food series?
The street food series. There's two seasons. There's one is in Asia and the other one is focused on Latin America. And it's really, really good.
They just travel around the streets and like, oh, what food you got in your cart or whatever?
It's very specific. It tells the story of the people who cook the food. Oh. And it follows, like, per city, it follows, like, three or four people who have made their living selling street food. Talks about their history, how they were brought up, the history of the food and stuff like that. It's really damn good. And then I started watching Taco Chronicles, which is...
Taco Chronicles, which
is also similar to that. It more tells the story about the people who are making it, but each episode follows a different type of taco. So there's an episode on carne asada. There's an episode on al pastor. There's an episode on basket tacos. So
I never heard of a basket taco. That sounds interesting.
It's good. So that's what I've been enjoying.
So when you watch this, do you just like salivate constantly?
I eat first.
You have to eat first. It's like food shopping. You don't want to food shop on a stomach that's growling, or else you'll buy everything.
And I made you a square.
Oh. You had a square to spare. Thank you, Ian.
You're welcome.
This is beautiful.
You could use it as a coaster, perhaps.
Well, I was going to say, what should I use this as, if not a coaster? What do you?
A coaster is probably
this
all
this is beautiful,
you could
use it Ian. For. Thank you. This touches my heart.
That was my warm up square last night.
Okay. You shouldn't have said that. You shouldn't have said this was your warm up square.
It's all cotton yarn.
I don't think you've ever made something for me before.
I don't think I have.
This is like the best thing you've ever given me.
I think it's the first square I've done where there are no mistakes.
Oh, okay. That's better. Yeah. When you say warm up, it's like the fuck up square. Thank you, Ian. This actually warms my heart a little bit.
Well, you're welcome.
Shows you thought about me a little bit.
I did.
Otherwise, no one else wanted it.
No. I was making it, and I was like, Bonnie, should I make Pat a square? And she was like, yeah, make Pat a square. I will make Pat a square.
What if she said no? Would you have not made it?
I probably would have still made you a square, but Bonnie
could have screwed the whole thing up.
It would have been funny to tell you that she said no, and I made it anyways, but no.
I will put it right now by the Menda bottle.
Oh, there you go. It's a Menda bottle coaster.
Yeah, that's what it is. Exactly. I will keep it there for now until I figure out another use
specifically for the Menda bottle.
Thank you, Ian. That warmed my heart.
You're welcome.
That's what you did this weekend.
That's what I did.
How long did it take you to do that square?
That was probably like... I'm not fast yet, so that was probably like 45 minutes.
And that's your crocheting. Remember, it's one pin, not two.
That's crochet. Yeah. That was probably about 45 minutes. In reality, it should probably take me about 10.
I've
got some time. I've got some improvement.
On the bus to the game store, you can do it, maybe?
I was watching TV, too. Lift. That's the whole thing. I'm trying to get it down to be something I can do while watching TV instead of just flipping through the phone while watching TV.
That's probably good, because that's destroyed all of our minds.
Yes. Yes.
Like, no reading anymore. Speaking of that, I have to read this. I will read this. Our pal Howard Scott Warshaw sent me his Once Upon Atari, How I Made History by Killing an Industry. Look how happy Howard looked there before he killed video games.
Before he destroyed them.
He
didn't destroy
them. Forward by Ernest Cline, author of Ready Player One. And there's an inscription. He inscribed it to me. Dear Pat, perhaps this makes me a punk who is all about Atari NES. N-E-S. Get it? N-E-S. Atari NES.
Atari NES. I get it.
With a happy smiley face. Yours truly, Howard. Thank you, Howard. This is great. Man, all the gifts. It's like my birthday. My birthday is coming up. Pretty soon.
What, 2 weeks?
2 weeks from Sunday, from the last past Sunday. So a little less than 2 weeks. I'm officially oldish now. So what did I do this weekend, you ask? I watched a little bit of the UFC event. Masvidal got KO'd by Usman. Brutally KO'd. And the reason I bring that up, I don't want to talk about UFC, is because Jake Paul challenged a former heavyweight champion, Daniel Cormier. Jake Paul did has boxed a few people, a former NBA, a rapper he killed the first time, then an NBA star in over 40, I forget who it was, killed him. And then he faced Ben Askren, who used to fight in the UFC, but as a wrestler. Not a striker, not a puncher. And Jake Paul beat him soundly. It was kind of strange. I'm not saying Ben Askren took a dive. He didn't take the fight seriously. He was not in shape. He showed up. Plus, he's outweighed by about 30 pounds by Jake Paul as well. And Jake Paul is like 20 years younger. So Ben Askren gets knocked down. He gets up for a standing eight count. It looks like he can still go. And they end the fight in the first round. And Jake Paul was crying, acting like he beat Apollo Creed from like Rocky, when it's like no one expected you to lose. Because Ben Askren's a wrestler. He doesn't know how to punch. You know,
it's very different.
So he Denzo like challenged Daniel Cormier, who is not someone I would ever want to try to even challenge for fakies. And Cormier, at the broadcast of this UFC event, Jake Paul was like trying to call him out. And Cormier is an announcer, and he gets up, and this was not him playing. He got in his face, and he said, "Don't play with me." He said, "This is not something you want to deal with." Meaning, like, this is for, I will kill you, basically, right, is what he said afterwards, which he would. And so Jake Paul is like, was calling him fat and everything. And even his brother, when Logan Paul's a sensible one, Logan Paul even said, like, "Dude, this is Daniel Cormier. Like, this is not a joke."
Right.
Like, he will kill you. And so, all I'm going to say is this about these YouTubers fighting people. Is like, I don't know who's buying these pay-per-views or who's putting up the money to watch a YouTuber box someone. That's not why you followed these YouTubers. And it's like, it's interesting. Yeah, he's a jock. You know, him and his brother, they used to like, you know, wrestle. And they're, you know, they're like 6 feet or whatever, you know, 210-pound guys. But I don't know how he got to this point. But Mr. Paul, I will say this. You will bite off more than you can chew eventually, and someone will have your number if you are not smart. And in this case, it's someone who legitimately, even boxing, but in MMA, he would kill, he would torture. He said, I would torture him. I'd rip his face off. And that's not hyperbole. He would do that, yeah. Be able to do that. So everyone obviously wants it to happen. Like they're chanting F Jake Paul at the UFC event.
Wow.
So like, that's all I'm going to say. I don't want to bring up that much, but that it's interesting where this is going to cross over into like reality at some point, or even on the street, and someone's going to kill this kid potentially. Yeah. Like another MMA guy who's like feels disrespected is just going to fucking kill this kid.
Grab him in a rear naked choke
or just
him
fuck
down.
Him up.
Yeah.
Like you can't bite off more than you can chew when it comes to this stuff. It's like, yeah, you boxed a few times against people that weren't qualified to be boxers.
Sure.
Now these are people actually made a living for 20 years fighting. Like, that's, you're going to piss someone off. That's all. Speaking of fighting, Ian, Mortal Kombat reviews came in. I have not seen it. I don't have HBO Max.
I have not seen it.
And I'm not the type of person that would probably pirate it, because I'm not the biggest Mortal Kombat fan. That said, I did watch the original movie in the theaters and loved it.
I love
it. And that's one of the best. It's probably still one of the best video game movies ever made, especially being that, you know, we're talking about, what was that, 95 when you didn't have a lot of money to make this movie, and you know, the CG was not the best. It was still an entertaining movie. They did justice to the spirit of Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, it was goofy. It had a great soundtrack.
Oh, absolutely.
There was
legendary soundtrack. Yeah,
fighting tournament. There was a tournament.
There was a tournament, and your fighting tournament game.
Yeah. So I have not watched the new Mortal Kombat yet either.
Mortal Kombat!
People love it when we give our opinions on things we haven't watched. I was actually fairly excited for it until I found out about the character in it that is not from any of the games.
Yes. So they made up an everyman character to be your bridge into the universe. I hate when they do this in movies.
It's so unnecessary.
Because if you're watching Mortal Kombat, you know what it's about.
Yeah.
When we saw the movie in 95, like basically the characters on Earth already acted as those characters, Liu Kang, Sonya, and Johnny Cage, who's not in this movie for some reason.
Johnny Cage should be your bridge character if you need one.
If you need a bridge character, if you don't want to use Liu Kang because he has all the monk background stuff, you can use Sonya, who's like an agent or a Hollywood actor. Like, it's already there. So
yeah, there's a lot of good choices, but Johnny Cage being just like a Hollywood actor, like boring white bread back, I mean, that's your, it's very very easy to use him.
So they make up this new character named Cole. Average, and the actor's a good actor. He had a great little turn in Iron Fist. He was a drunken kung fu guy in Iron Fist season one.
Oh, okay, I know the guy.
Very talented. Yeah, some people said he should have been maybe Shang-Chi or up for the role. Maybe he probably was up for the role. What's that?
Quan Chi?
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
For the Marvel one?
Or Shang Tsung. There's Shang Tsung and Quan Chi.
I'm talking about Shang-Chi from Marvel.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, he was up for that role, potentially. Gotcha. And so, not on him, but it sounds like his character was so bland and generic from the reviews. It's like, he's like an MMA fighter who's down on his luck with a kid. And, you know, it's like, come on, we don't need this. There's 1,000 Mortal Kombat characters that we can work in here. So I will see this at some point. And it sounds like some people were like, oh, you know, it's good. It's got good Sub-Zero versus Scorpion fight.
Everyone says the intro is fantastic.
Which they put online before the movie came out, so I already saw it.
Oh, that's what it is?
They put that out online, yeah.
Oh, I didn't see. I don't think I saw that. I saw the first couple of trailers, but I didn't see the first.
Oh, it was out online. They pumped it up week four, so I watched. It was like a 3-minute scene, so I watched it. That wasn't him versus him. It was them killing. Spoilers. I mean, it's a backstory. They're killing Scorpion's clan or whatever. They're going after him. I guess I didn't know. I didn't realize that. So I didn't realize Scorpion's Japanese and Sub-Zero's Chinese. I had no idea about that. So, like, they couldn't speak to each other. So they do confront each other in a different language. I'm like, oh, I did not know that. That's the one thing I didn't know about that.
I don't think that's the case in the game.
Oh, well, then they changed that. You can complain about that. But anyway, one's Chinese and one's Japanese in the game. Because they're trying to talk to each other. And he's like, I'm trying to kill your guys. And the other guy's like, I don't understand you. So I'm like, okay, this is interesting. So that got me interested. But then when I hear there's no tournament, and this basically acts like a prequel, where they want to kill off the Earth Realm fighters before the tournament, so then we don't have any defense, which seems like that's dirty pool.
Of course that's dirty pool.
That's kind of against the rules, because I guess if you get one more win against Earth, you can take over the Earth. That's part of the lore.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't like setup movies. Just do a fucking movie. Don't assume we're going to be around for 4 sequels, which I think they signed the one actor to 5 movies, so it's like, are we going to get to 5 Mortal Kombat movies? You really think we're going to get there to 5? Maybe 3.
The thing is like, the reason I love the Mortal Kombat games...
It's thin.
Starting with Mortal Kombat 9, and NetherRealm is really good with this. They do it in the... Injustice games. Jesus.
That's a DC games?
Yeah.
DC fighting games.
They do really good story modes. Mm. And they're wacky, and they just pull shit from everywhere. And you could have... Obviously, you can't just put that out as a movie, but they've got the people writing these stories.
Why can't you just do the games? Like, here's game one, here's game two, here's game three, and add in the characters.
Sure.
And there is a winner to each of those, right? In the lore, there is a winner.
Yes.
And a story that continues. Just do that.
What I'm getting at is they have the people to do these really good, fun, goofy stories that would play out fantastically big screen. And they want to do this, I guess, semi-serious.
Yeah, and it sounds like the Kano was the highlight because he was comic relief and not taking it seriously.
I heard Kano was good. I heard the intro was good. I heard, like, most of the performances themselves were good. It was just the overall structure of the movie and the addition of this character that no one needs.
When I heard they needed this bridge character, I was just like, you don't need that. Like, come on. Right. No one's going into this not knowing what Mortal Kombat is.
How much more can we talk about a movie we haven't seen?
But Falcon Winter Soldier ended, and that was really good.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
The six episodes, this is the one time I'd say they probably needed to stretch it into 7 episodes, because the last episode was a lot of stuff compacted in, and I'm pretty sure, looking at how this was made, this is one of those ones that was in production then stopped because of the pandemic. I'm looking at this like, I think this last episode was the one that they just got done after the when they restarted, because they just threw a lot in there to finish it up. It's like, oh, we were like 90% done.
When are we going to get the show that gets it right? Like, is it too short or too long?
Yeah, WandaVision was like 2 episodes too long. This was 1 too short, because the pacing was really good. And this is spoilers. Ian hasn't seen it. Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. Skip ahead 3 minutes when we're talking about Super Mario Party. Zemo comes back and is excellent from Civil War. Outstanding. I want to see more of him in everything, that actor.
Who is that guy?
I don't know. He's been in stuff, though. And then the Zemo dance went viral. So Marvel put out the cut of him dancing in a nightclub. John Walker, U.S. agent.
Daniel Brühl.
Played by Kurt Russell's son, Kyle Russell. Outstanding job. He was getting death threats, the actor, because they hated him. Because people are fucking stupid and don't realize he's acting in a part and don't realize in the comics that John Walker took over for Captain America for like 3 years, 3-4 years in the 80s.
Right.
It's like 3 years, 2 years. I didn't realize when I bought some comics in the 80s, from the 80s, that, this isn't Steve Rogers. Like, you can kind of tell because they made his nose look different and, like, he looks a little bit different, but his attitude's totally different. Great job with him. Kyle Russell did a great job, and he becomes the awesome U.S. agent at the end, which was weird because in the comics, I believe they wanted Cap to do that, or he had, like, the costume for a bit in the 80s, and then they swapped it. It was weird. But basically, Steve said, you know, I'm not going to do your bidding anymore because you want me to go fight wherever, and so that's why they need a new Captain America. So in this case, it's because Steve's not around anymore. We don't know if he's retired or just dead. They say Steve's gone, though, so he probably died of natural causes, I guess. Even though you still take the serum and you get young. That's how Nick Fury stayed young in the comics.
Not going to think about it. I don't know.
Anyway, but it was a good series. It was good. And then, obviously, Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan were fantastic. Like, great. Like, sure. Outstanding chemistry, those two. That's why you watch it. It was like almost like a buddy cop sort of movie. Like, they like each other. They don't like each other. You know? Perfect. Super Mario Party is now online, Ian.
That's exciting.
Is that big news, Ian?
It's big news. So I don't like, in general, I don't like Mario Party. Even when I'm playing with four people, Mario Party is a lot of randomness. However, if you're going to have fun with Mario Party, it's while playing with four people. It's been real hard to get four people together lately, mm-hmm. and it's always hard to get four people together to play Mario Party. So the addition of online...
Out of nowhere
with absolutely
RKO.
Yeah, no, no warning whatsoever. They've
so added, Nintendo to do that.
They've added online capability for the main mode, 70 of the mini games in some sort of 2v2 mode that I don't understand.
This game came out 2.5 years ago, and they're dropping this.
Yeah, so that's really welcome. And is, you know, hopefully going forward they will make sure they always put online modes in. In Mario Party, the only reason I can think of they never did before was it's probably hard to keep enough people. It's probably hard to get four people to stay online for a whole game.
You think so?
Probably harder
but
than say Mario
just,
Kart or
but
something.
They even added just doing individual minigames.
Yeah, they did add 70 minigames.
For just short, you know, just short play.
You can do that. But I would rather take that risk of having someone drop out of the game and at least have the option to do online Mario Party, then not at all.
Yeah, because even if you know, if, like me and you are going to play, we're not going to drop out randomly or rage quit. You know,
right.
Like, if you just do friend codes or whatever. Someone surmised, I saw on a Twitter thread, that maybe this is a test run for they're going to do a sequel, which will definitely have online. It's the test run. They figured it out.
That's my
guess. Either way, like I was talking to Ian before, like I had zero interest in a game that you couldn't play online like this, even before the pandemic. Like, why... I'm never going to have three people over to play Mario Party.
Right.
You're just not. That's not how we work, you know, for the most part. Like, you want to play at 10 at night, you want to just fire it up. There's not three people to come over. You know what I mean? Whenever you want.
Yeah.
Or like a Sunday morning, you got to get people. No, we're past that. Even though some consoles, a new console staking their whole existence on it, we are past that point where you have to be tied to a couch and other people. It's nice to have that option, but you can't depend upon that.
We live in a modern era where you can do both, so let's do both instead of pretending like you should only have to do one.
Yes, or artificially bring people together. Because, yeah, I remember all those fucking Bomberman Super Nintendo parties we used to have in high school. You know, we did that a couple times, but it was usually, you know, after some pizza. Two versus two partner party, 70 minigames, and online to the board game. And people were like, what the hell? Because this will help sales. I might think about getting this.
Oh no!
Now.
If I can find a used copy, I'll pick it up when I get Pokemon Snap this Friday.
Oh, okay. There I you will. Go. See Nintendo? Nintendo like
they, something dumb to do at night.
Nintendo comes late to the party, but maybe they get there eventually.
Yeah.
Hey, they have like half a 6-pack left. They're like, hey, we got like 20 minutes left. But all right, we got some mini oven little wieners left.
Little Smokies.
Little cocktail ones. Little Smokies, is that what they're called?
Little Smokies, yeah.
Is that what they're called without the buns on them? When they're just cocktail weenies without the bun, with the little...
Yeah, little Smokies. Those are little smoked sausages, but I just... Cocktail weenies, Little Smokies.
Is there a cocktail weenie minigame in Super Mario Party? There should be.
That's what I'm aware of.
You can have a party at ultimatenintendo.com. You can get enamel pins.
Oh, boy.
RBI baseball stickers. don't be facetious.
Excellent.
Excellent. Certain NES Super Nintendo guidebooks. And the not for resale Blu-ray, which is now more than ever more important to learn about the potential death of video game stores and physical media. You can go to there as well. I'm also on Cameo, cameo.com/PatContry for all your birthday and shout-out needs, and also every Wednesday, twitch.tv/ContryCode. Ian will pop in one day to say hi, I'm sure.
One day.
How's that Apple doing, Ian? You want to talk about Apple?
I mean, I don't. Sorry, I was like finding where the topics were, and then I pulled up a recipe for scallion pancakes.
What? The, what?
I have a tab open for extra flaky scallion
okay,
pancakes.
Okay, well, all right. We'll get back to that. We're doing. We got a job to do. We have to entertain people.
Yes. So Apple had terminated an account with $25,000 worth of apps and videos.
My God.
Wow, ouch, really highlighting just how temporary your ownership of anything is in the digital age.
They're facing two class action lawsuits over the meaning of the words rent and buy.
Yeah. In the first suit, this is coming from Ars Technica, in the first suit, lead plaintiff David Andino argues that Apple's definition of the two words is deceptive, since the company can terminate people's Apple IDs and along with them access to the content they purchased using the buy button.
Sure.
And yeah, I mean, this, that, I
it's
understand.
Dry. You buy it, yeah.
So, I mean, you're not really buying anything if it can still be taken away is the argument here.
Sure.
It's basically just a long form version of renting. You rent until they terminate it or it's no longer available. And I've always had this argument with myself when it comes to like Amazon. I bought a couple of videos through Amazon and it's the same way. They don't give you an easy way to download like a hard copy anywhere. So really you're just renting it until that service is terminated.
Sure. You bought the license, but that license expires.
And this is the same thing we talk about all the time with like digital gaming and whatnot. And, you know, sometimes it's the way you have to go if that's the only way a developer can get something published and it's a risk that you have to take. But boy, when this is put in front of you like this, it really makes you realize just how precarious that situation is. Click of the fingers and it's gone.
The suit says, first of all, what did this guy do to get terminated? I know it's not
that
part
I actually
of lawsuit,
don't
but
know.
I'm actually interested in knowing what would cause him to get your Apple account terminated.
Yeah, no idea, honestly.
That's probably not common. Anyway, so the suit says, just like Best Buy cannot come into a person's home to repossess the movie DVD that such a person purchased from it, Apple should not be able to remove digital content from its customers' purchase folders, the suit says. Apple countered by arguing that no reasonable consumer would believe that content purchased through iTunes would be available on the platform indefinitely. But U.S. District Court Judge John Mendez wasn't buying it, as first noticed by the Hollywood Reporter. Oh, he missed the Hollywood Reporter doing this. He rejected a motion filed by Apple that sought to dismiss the suit. That means the suit can move forward with its claims of false advertising and unfair competition, though it still could be settled before going to trial. I think that's what it's going to more hinge on. It's false advertising.
Yes.
You're not buying it if you can't own it indefinitely.
Sure.
I mean, that's what it comes down to. And yeah, Apple is technically probably correct. It won't be available forever. What if Apple's gone and the aliens take us over in 100 years and Apple's servers go down? Then we won't have it as we huddle into a little cave somewhere with solar power. That's what I thought about that scenario. But he's right. I mean, Apple's even right. Everyone's right in an extent. So I don't know. They might have to change the terms of service. I don't know.
Have to change the TOS or the wording is what's going to happen. I just want to point out, because I am wrong, it does say here that Prime Video can be downloaded and stored locally.
Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
Oh.
Apparently, I've looked. They must make that. I haven't looked in
must
a couple
be a weird
of years,
option.
But I think it's a weird option you have to hunt for. They make it hard.
Should Apple refund this person their money? That might be part of the lawsuit. I guess it would have to be. He claims he lost $24,590.05 in iTunes, the App Store, and in-app purchase. Wait a second. So if they terminate your account, this stuff's still on your phone, though. Like, all my apps are still on the phone.
Yes, but
you just can't go back and re-download it.
Right, but what it's saying, so it's making the argument that he had over 1 terabyte worth of purchases. There is no iPhone on the market that holds 1 terabyte.
So it sounds like there's a lot of movies and content like that, because apps aren't that huge, and how much apps can you use? But yeah, I mean, okay, I get it. They're going to have to refund them. Amazon is defending a similar lawsuit filed last April by people who claim the company falsely advertised that they would have unlimited access to content purchased through Prime Video. They are concerned that Amazon secretly reserves the right to terminate the consumer's access and use of the video content at any time. Woo! Okay. Well, this might be a watershed sort of lawsuit or, you know, a landmark case.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
But if you, I think the guy's right, Duffy. If I click buy, am I really buying this? Or am I just sort of, like I said, it's like a lease thing. I don't ever own it. Maybe they should burn all the movies and all the content and mail the guy like in a fucking box. Here's all your stuff. If Apple's going to be assholes, here you go. Here's your movies on DVD, and you know, just mail them all the.
Just ship them a dusty hard drive.
Yeah, here's a hard drive with all your apps you can play on an iOS platform. What else is going on? I guess a good update here. Update. To the Castlevania Dreamcast story we've covered a couple of times. The Castlevania Dreamcast demo that was found, there was a YouTube video, it was put on eBay, there was a legal threat from the composer of the music to take it down, and now it looks like it has been dumped, this demo.
Excellent. Yay.
Excellent. Excellent. What a great fucking song, that theme.
The Mortal Kombat theme was very good.
So the E3 demo has been dumped. It was confirmed via this. I see on this Nintendo Life article, they covered it, and
it's good. That was a weird story.
Yeah,
strange story. I'm glad it was dumped. Who dumped it? Was it the person?
I guess the person had it.
Good. Maybe they were guilted into doing it.
They absolutely were guilted into doing it. Obviously, because they wanted to sell it for $20,000,
which is good. I'm glad they were guilted.
You're glad they were guilted.
I'm glad they were guilted.
Hey, guilt works sometimes.
Yeah, I'm glad they were shamed.
Is that all we got to say about that?
Yeah, that's all we got to say about
that. I'm surprised Konami didn't come out and say, that's ours. You know, we're going to take that back, or maybe they realize it's not worth our time.
I don't think Konami gives a fuck anymore.
About anything?
No.
Are they back to making games then, or are they still just doing pachinko machines and
kinda
slot machines?
Kind of games, I think.
Kind of sort of games?
Kind of sort of games.
They're just licensing out. Do something with the Bonk game. Come on. Do something with Bonk. Speaking of that, there was a... Or speaking of preservation, a Monica story, which is not something you find on
Monica's
Pornhub.
Castle, an unreleased Sega Saturn game called Monica's Castle. It was canceled right before commercial release, but some factory
print. Why did I put
that
Monica's
discs.
Story?
Because if you Google Monica's Castle, I think Monica's story comes up as something different. Because I was trying to look.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Oh, so I got Google tricked me.
I think Google tricked you. Looks like some sort of RPG. Game. I don't really have
third person.
Don't have a whole lot to say about it, other than it's neat that it was found.
It was finished, it looks like.
Yeah.
So it's a factory printed discs were found?
It was supposed to go it was absolutely supposed to go to it was ready for release.
That's so weird. Yeah. You get to that point and they're like, nope, we can't do this. That's
yep, there it is with its slow rotation, very slow rotation.
Oh, it looks like a Saturn game.
Yeah. It looks
Some people like that. Some people like that style. I personally don't, but, you know.
I mean, I do. That's pretty slow, though.
There is a run button, someone confirmed. Someone's asking about that.
Oh, okay.
There's a run button.
You're good.
Hey, that sword is heavy. Big-ass sword Monica is wielding there.
That it's interesting.
And our pal, AutoZone, former CEO, AutoZone, George Sherman, AutoZone guy, we have affectionately touted him. CEO of GameStop is going to step down from the company in the coming, month or two. This is from Reuters. George Sherman has been in the company 2 years, and we knew it was going to be a failure when we first talked about it. Not that we were always right about this stuff, but come on. It's the AutoZone guy.
Yeah, this was not a perfect fit. This did not make any sense.
What is the board of directors thinking? What is the board thinking at GameStop, huh? If Reggie was there at the time, we would have said, this is the AutoZone guy. If he was like, what are you doing? Reggie's, by the way, not on the board anymore. So he's going to walk away with $179 million worth of compensation, which I guess is probably mostly stock. That's how they, because stock is cheap. It's not money. So, yeah. So it's also because, obviously, the stock's worth a lot of money. So if this happened 6 months ago, it would be a lot less than $179. So not everyone go nuts about, hey, this guy's getting $179 million. It was stock that was worth a lot less, just to make that clear. It was probably, you know, it would be like $20 million or whatever 6 months ago, whatever, or less. He's going to be stepping down July 31st, and then be working on finding a new leader. Because of good old the Chewy guy, Ryan Cohen, wants to transition to e-commerce, and I guess he convinced the board this is the direction we're going to go because he bought a lot of stock. So that's what they want to do. But the good news here, GameStop, what are you thinking? They also decoupled some of Sherman's pay from his performance last year because of the pandemic, but he's not getting his
like
full...
Like a fucking train?
Well, that's the term. It's a good word, decouple. So he did... There was some performance-based compensation that he's not getting because of that. Partially his fault, partially not because of the pandemic. He forfeited $98 million worth of stock this month because he did not meet performance targets. Again, the stock is worth, at this point, still $150. It was worth, what, $4 in the... So that's a, Pat Math, 40-time increase over what it was. So good on George Sherman. He's getting out at the right time, I guess. What was it worth 6 months ago? I'm going to see.
I do not know.
Well, the 52-week low was $377. So, yeah, he would have gotten 40 times less money. So he held on. Good for George, I guess. Good for him. Because I don't like when people see this stuff. Like, oh, they're taking all this money. He's not taking... It's stock. It's stock. It's worthless for the company to give someone stock. It just dilutes your what stock you already have. That's all it is. It's fake money until you sell it. So good on you, George. You got out when the getting was good. And we'll see if they can turn things around. I still don't think they can. You think they can?
No, I think it's going to be very, very difficult. If they, I mean...
Even with the Chewy guy who has experience with the pet store stuff?
If they shuttered...
Oh, they're going to shutter stores.
Half the stores and move only online, then yeah, they might be able to.
Oh, that's coming. Especially with this move, oh, that's coming.
Yeah. I mean, I do think there is a potential future for them as an e-retailer. Yeah.
For new stuff.
But anyone can do... Yeah, because they've at least got name recognition. I could see them doing that. I don't see a future for the walk-in stores. No.
I think it'll be tough even to get people to buy in to go to GameStop in particular to purchase new stuff when there's so many other options at this point, or Amazon or Target.
They would have to focus entirely on it in a volume that would allow them to bring back things like an Amazon style
discount,
pre-order discount,
they first did,
or something.
They
used
to do like $10 off a new game, which no one else could match, you know.
Right, but and then of course Best Buy tried to do that, you know, and there was that scramble for everyone to do that, and they all realized, holy shit, we can't make any money doing that, and literally every company, including Amazon and Best Buy, were like, we can't do this.
Yeah, Amazon just basically did to get into the market, and it worked because everyone's like, oh, they sell new games on Amazon, because I bought a couple games of that because of that.
But the only thing I can think of is, like I said, if GameStop can do it, can focus on just that and do it in such a volume that they could bring back something like even a $5 off pre-order discount, that's the only way I could see them really bringing people in.
Because
otherwise,
you're not going to be able to do trade-ins online too easily. You're not going to be able to...
No, there are places that do, but it's not super easy to do it.
No, I can't picture that being a thing that's going to be happening. So, all right, well, good on you, George Sherman. Get that cash.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right. Ian.
Are we moving into real podcast?
This is a streamlined podcast. Ian.
Patrick.
The Evercade versus console was just announced based upon the Evercade handheld, which is not a system we have covered in depth. We did talk about it initially, but there is an audience that likes this.
Boy, howdy, we love talking about these new consoles, don't we? So the Evercade Verse is the consoleized version of the Evercade handheld system. The Evercade handheld system came out in early 2020 during the lockdown, May 2020. And I remember...
It did?
Yes.
Okay.
And I remember I remember there was some immediate reviews that were a little less than favorable to it. I think it didn't have like reassignable buttons and stuff like that, but I'm fairly certain Evercade did a firmware update. Reviews for this thing seem to be pretty good. For people who like it, for people who wanted a cartridge-based gaming system that appealed to retro stuff. This is exactly it. It uses actual cartridges. There's no online connectivity.
And pre-existing games that they re-licensed to put on compilation cards.
Right. So,
Atari Lynx, Atari, NES, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, a lot of this stuff was, we'll just say, either lesser-known titles or stuff that was probably easily and cheaply, you know, licensed for the most part. There's Atari collections and what, Namco? And
there are the Namco ones as well. There are the Namco collections. I think the Namco collections are probably, if I had to guess...
Probably.
They're not the arcade ROMs. They're probably the NES ROMs and stuff like that.
Mm.
But so anyways, you can buy these cartridges. Each one is loaded up with games. Pop it in and off you go. And like Pat said, tons of different ones. The Lynx ones always looked interesting.
There's about 20 that were released of these collections.
And they're still putting out more. There's even some of the like better known modern homebrews have gotten releases on here. Xenocrisis, for instance, by Bitmap Bureau, is a fantastic game, and has Genesis versions. And that I think that's the one that's ported.
There's a Worms collection.
Yeah,
there you go.
There's a Worms collection. The handheld is
Codemasters.
The handheld is said to run NES, Super Nintendo, Genesis, Atari, ROMs. I don't know what more it can do than that. So I'm not sure what versions of the Worms games it's running, but it's a capable piece of retro gaming hardware.
It does what it says to do. It was $80 for this thing. And it was $100 for the premium, which I guess I forget if that came with a card or two.
Came with a card.
I mean, that's about what the range for prices of this stuff. You don't want to go over $100 for something that retro for the most part.
So they've got a new system coming out, the Evercade Verse, and honestly, I think it's a decent idea. If you're already into this like Evercade ecosystem, I guess this pretty much already has its installed user base, and that's the people who have been into the handhelds. And like I said, there definitely seems to be a market for it. So this is the Evercade. You hook it up to your TV. It has 4 USB controller ports. They have their own controllers. I don't know if you can use other off-brand USB controllers. It has 2 cartridge slots, so you can have double the games basically ready to go.
From what I read, it's for like if you have Atari Collection 1 and 2, it'll bring up the menus together.
Yep. So pop them both in.
Which is a smart thing because the cartridges are small. They're like a Lynx size little carts.
Yeah.
You know?
It's handy. This stuff is...
It's handy, non-handheld?
This is real pick-up and play stuff that pretty much anyone could grab and get a hold of.
Real games, not mobile quality trash.
No,
real games that people like and have enjoyed for the past 30 to 40 years.
And the price on this thing, I don't know what the conversion is. It's going to be 100. It's
100 US.
100 US. 100 pounds and 100 US. That's cheap enough to be an afterthought for people who are into this.
If you already got 10, 12 carts and you like this ecosystem, why not? I don't hate the idea. It's already a pre-existing product from a company that makes real products, and they deliver on it. So it's like, I don't hate the idea. I don't hate it.
Oh, except the Namco Collections 1 and 2 will not be usable on the Evercade Verse because they were only licensed for handheld.
Wow, okay.
Blaze hopes to expand the license to achieve full compatibility.
Wow.
I have a feeling they'll find a way to work that out with Namco.
Wow, so Namco was like, no, we want some extra dollars here.
This is different.
So extra Pac-Man fruit.
That's weird. I didn't know you could license specifically.
There'll be a lockout for those. It'll be like, okay, can't play these games. Interesting.
Like they said, the company hopes to expand the license to achieve full compatibility soon. I'm going to be honest here. This is not for me. I don't really
This is not for me. If this was me, I would have got the handheld.
I don't have an interest in this. No. I love handhelds, too, is the thing. But
Handheld.
And this is all... games are stuff... Like, there are packs that are interesting. I just have other... I can emulate or play a lot of these games any other way.
Emulate.
I don't see the need to have a system that will do it. However... Despite the fact that it's not for me, I have seen that there is a market for it. Like I said, I have friends who have these and they really enjoy them. And at this price point, I think this is this makes sense.
Okay, yeah. What do I like about this? I think it's cute. I think the console itself looks cute.
It does look kind
of nice. I like the NES little lid. I like the sort of like SNK
the red and white look
colors.
Is nice, yeah.
Yeah. I like the fact that, okay, well, this is so small. We'll put in 2 slots to be able to do what you said. Like, if you have the Atari Collection 1 and 2, we'll put that in. I like that. I like the fact that you can use third-party USB. I looked it up.
Okay.
At least on Wikipedia. And you can even use the Evercade handheld as a controller. To link in. So, okay. I hate how these controllers look, though. I think these controllers look bad.
Yeah, I don't love the look of the... I like the look of the system. I don't love the look of the controller.
I'm not... I hate the fact that we still don't have... Do a regular D-pad, not a circular D-pad. I hate that they don't do that. Why is start and select vertical, not horizontal? Some games you need to do that. I guess with the extra buttons, you can probably remap it, though. So, and I think there are triggers on top.
There are.
That's fine, but I just don't... that just looks weird to me to have that. And I guess there's also, like, a menu or reset button in the middle, it looks like.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm looking back. I don't hate the controller as much as I thought I did.
Are those those shiny plastic buttons? And not? Can we go? Can we make? Can
those
we
look like the buttons that were on the Wii Pro controllers?
Can we just make it make? Controllers. Can we just make a law that if you have four face buttons, two have to be concave and two convex, just for humanity's sake?
I don't love it as much as you do,
but it's just nice to have. Your little thumb nestles into that button, and it knows exactly where
this
it's at.
This really is like your pet
cause. I will die
your,
on this hill.
I know you will.
Because it was abandoned after the Super Nintendo, I think. That was it. And it wasn't done in the Super Famicom, but in the U.S., you're like, you know what? We're dumber here in North America. We need that. We didn't know if we're on X, Y, or B and A. All right. Okay, I don't like how this controller looks. Obviously, until I actually have one in my hand, I will reserve all judgment. But I'm very finicky when I come to my D-pad and my buttons. Obviously, very finicky, but the console itself looks okay. I like the fact that it's dual cartridge. I like the fact that there's four ports on it. There you go. There's your couch co-op if you have it there.
So if you need a couch co-op system that doesn't do online, you can pay $250 for one that might be coming out in the future, or you can pay $100 for this one.
Yeah, because no console since the Super Nintendo had two controllers packed out, even though that's a fucking lie, because the N64 had versions with it, and the Switch just has two controllers, technically, the Joy-Cons, but whatever.
Who doesn't love redefining words?
We'll just redefine words like exclusive. Anyway, so this is a question I'll ask from a business standpoint. Will this sell to anyone who does not have the handheld already? Or is this really going to be the people who double dip and basically spend twice the money to get the...
That I don't know. I think here's from a production standpoint, this can't be costing them that much.
Oh, nothing
in terms of dev or anything.
It's the same board.
They literally took the board, added the games. They kept the multiplayer in those game ROMs, even though there was no Bluetooth connectivity on the system, because they knew they were going to be doing this in the future.
Absolutely.
So this is literally just designing a new shell, throwing the same board that they've been working on in there, adding four controllers,
add a cartridge slot,
and a video out. So I think it makes sense. I don't think they need to worry about whether or not this is going to sell to people who don't have the handheld, because it's not, they're not putting a whole lot of money into it. I see this as an afterthought. Personally, I don't know if this is going to sell to someone who doesn't already own the handheld, because I think most people probably already have a way to play these games.
I agree. There are double triggers on top of the controllers. I missed that originally. So that'll be your start and select button if you're playing, there is no My Touch Punch. But some game where you need an extra button for, like, an NES game, because they decided, Metroid, we need a select button. I don't hate the idea. Me and Ian don't always poo-poo this stuff if we think it makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, it exists. There was some pushback on this originally because the controller, I think some people had issues with it, and there was a firmware update. I believe that it was this, but I can't keep these all straight in my head. But if they sell, they sell. I mean, there's 26,000 views on this announcement, and it was like, it's like 99% are thumbs up on this.
So, yeah, there it is.
Oh, and Evercade responded to my comment. I said, it's certainly intriguing. They said, it is indeed. Let us know if you need more information. Yeah. I mean, all right. Okay. They said, someone else said, big fans of the podcast, someone who works on it, I guess. Unfortunately, no wood grain for Ian to slap his appendages against, though. Is that someone from Evercade that said that? I'm a bigger fan of you guys now. I'm a bigger fan. We forget that we have game devs and people that listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
And it's actually surprising the more weeks go by, and I will not spoil for you. Someone left us a voicemail, a game dev in the future.
Oh.
So it's actually funny to see this stuff happen, you know.
Very interesting.
Who knows, two idiots doing a podcast about old games and people actually making new games and consoles, you know, listen to us.
Pay attention to it.
Anyway, Evercade, when does this thing come out again? That's the one thing I missed out on.
November.
November?
November 3rd, I believe.
Pre-orders start May 28th. All right. Okay. So there is something coming out through the pandemic, because I know there's one company that keeps blaming the pandemic, but all these other companies have managed to put this stuff out and properly plan and project manage. It's amazing, Ian. It's amazing. This segment of the CU podcast is sponsored by Skull Chess Games. Does your retro game collection need spicing up, or maybe just reorganization? Well, you can head over to skullchessgames.com, where you can find sturdy and affordable display stands for your classic console games like the NES, Super Nintendo, N64, PS1, PS2, DS, Game Boy, Game Gear, and more.
That covers really just about all of it. You want to show off your nice controllers? Skull Chess Games has you covered with controller stands for N64, Switch Joy-Cons, PlayStation, and more. There's even one for the Zapper. Most stands and displays offer the option of customizing them with the word or short phrase of your choice. Check out the more than 500 reviews and 5-star ratings and see what others have to say.
Special offer right now. You can save 10% off by using code NESPUNK at checkout when you go to skullchessgames.com. Again, go to skullchessgames.com and use code NESPUNK to save 10%. So what are you waiting for? Go make your collection look nifty. All right, Ian.
Yeah.
We have not spoken about GameStop actually selling things in a while. It's been a while. In particular, we have not spoken about their retro gaming sales, which started now almost, 5 years ago. A lot of it, some of it happened when you were out sick in late 2016, talking about the retro gaming initiative. It was their plan. This is pre-George Sherman, AutoZone's guy, plan to turn things around and get into the retro gaming market and do retro gaming trade-ins and sell them online. They had a big warehouse, I believe, out in Texas, where they shipped everything and cleaned the console and did all that stuff. And of course, at the time, we both said, this is crazy. You have to be very specialized and knowledgeable to sell all these different retro gaming consoles and know what you're doing. And then it quickly turned into, it became, when you were gone, all the counterfeits that people were unfortunately being sent for expensive games,
right?
DuckTales 2 and Sculptor's Cut, and people were doing videos saying, "Hey, this is a fake. I got it from GameStop." It became like a little, like almost mini genre of videos for probably like a 6 to 8 month period, like 4 years ago, mm-hmm. something like that. Ian probably saw something. We probably talked about a few of those. So they did trade-ins in every store. People were bringing in games that were counterfeits and probably getting a lot more value, like Little Samson and things like that. So obviously, with the pandemic hitting, a lot less people are going to physical stores and a lot less trade-ins. But obviously, even before that, the retro gaming, I think, GameStop initiative was dying out way before that, before last year. So a follower named Jason emailed and asked, "Hey, how about an update about the retro gaming stuff at GameStop?" Because I hadn't looked in probably a year or two at this, at their page. So when you go to the retro gaming GameStop page, on the top you see the Intellivision Amico for sale for pre-order. That's definitely going to come out 10/10/21. The Atari VCS is up there. Supercharge your Nintendo with it's the Eon Gaming looks like adapter, HDMI adapter. So that's a new product. And there's the GameCube one, N64 one, and then a bunch of newer Mega Cat Studio stuff is being for sale. The studio we talked about last week, where they do NES releases, Genesis, Super Nintendo. And there isn't a lot of actual retro games that are left for sale on the page.
No, when you actually go through and look, there's a few things on here that you can I think you can actually buy. For instance, yes, I can actually buy, if I wanted to, I could buy the entire anthology for Xbox.
Disc only.
Yeah.
It looks like.
So the way this works is, for a long time, people were ordering these and getting like disc only or whatever, and they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I think they initially showed the original box art, but so much of the stuff was traded in loose and sold disc only that when you actually look at the listings online now, they just show the discs.
You would assume that it was out of box or case, and if you were sent the box or case, it was a bonus,
right?
Basically,
and you can also get a copy of Jak and Daxter. Disc only for the PlayStation 2 for $5. But then they have a lot of things up here that were probably like some of the bigger sellers for them at the time. Always knew that the Nintendo stuff would be big sellers for them. So you can't, there are still placeholder spots here for Kirby's Air Ride at $39.99, which is that disc only. Pokemon Emerald for $59.99, which if it was actually in stock and legit would be a steal of a price on it right now.
Who knows if that's the real one, though?
Right. Pokemon Fire. But you can't buy it anyway, is what I'm getting at. Like, they have...
Oh, you can't buy it when you click on it?
No. They have Double Dash up here for 40. You can't buy it. You can't buy Pokemon Emerald at 60 when you click on it. You can't buy Fire Red when you click on it for 35.
Oh, I can't buy the Super Smash Bros. Melee disc.
No, of course not.
Try to add it to my cart.
That's what I'm getting at. Like, most of this stuff, you cannot buy. These are just placeholders for what was probably the more popular stuff.
Oh, no.
Something like Fire Red selling for $34.99 is actually pretty cheap for that game right now. That game can go for easily $100.
Can I buy any of this?
Like I said, you can buy the first two. If you look at it, the one, like the prices that actually say pre-owned next to it, so the Atari Anthology and the Jack and Daxter collection, you can click on
it. Oh, I can click that. Okay.
These other ones, you cannot. Like Diddy Kong Racing? No, you cannot. Oh, nope, not available. Yeah, you can't buy it.
And there are some also, you know, on the bottom, like more like this. So like, oh, you click on that Jack and Daxter, more like this. There's some other like original Xbox games on the bottom, Dead to Rights, Wipeout XL. If you click on those, can I add? No. Oh, no, you can add that one. So there are ones here and there. But the fact of the matter is they've basically gotten rid of their segmentation of like, oh, here's all this console. Here's all Nintendo. Here's all Super. Here's all Xbox.
They had grand ideas that they were going to have a retro section that you could navigate like their modern section. Click on a system, have all the games come up. It never took off that way. I think the fact that trade-ins, retro trade-ins for a long time were limited to only certain locations. The lack of certainty... They stopped even trying to test for things like looking for counterfeits and things like that. That's what I was trying to say. I'm sorry about the Game Boy. They sell them at these low prices because they know they're probably going to get a bunch of returns. Because when they even had them in stock, they were mostly counterfeit.
So they are still segmented. I look, you have to like click through and then go like, okay, it's like video-game/retro-gaming/GameCube. Now it's segmented out. It's basically like, it's almost like, it's not its own filter, but you have to click around to get to this stuff now in order to see, in theory, what's available for sale.
In case it wasn't obvious,
they're not available.
Browsability of this section is awful.
But most of the stuff, I'm clicking on the GameCube games now, I'll click on like six randomly, I'll see which ones are available, just to see.
None of those are going to be available.
System's not available for the silver one. Sonic Adventure 2 is not available. Mario Party 7 is not available. Legend of Zelda is not available. The Master Quest, Sonic Heroes is not available. So even the cheaper games are not available. Collector's Edition Zelda is not available. Pokemon Coliseum is not available. Mario Party is not available. Or excuse me, Paper Mario is not available. So that's the point. It's like now there's just not this stuff. I'm going to do NES just for the hell of it.
Anything that they had at the price points that they're listing would be, there's no way it would have lasted through pandemic. So what I'm getting at is it's all gone. Basically anything they had was sold and they're not replenishing it.
That makes sense.
I
find the Super Nintendo section.
So I'm pretty sure they've just left the retro game section to die. I don't know if they're still taking stuff in.
Okay.
But it's obvious they're not really spending any time on updating this site.
So when I click on Nintendo, so Nintendo shows up, not NES, as a section. Most of it is newer stuff. It's the stuff from Mega Cat Studios for the NES. An NES system for $60 is not available. Super Mario 3, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, Legend of Zelda, Contra, Terminator 2. Let's see if any of those are available. Not available. Not available. Not available. Super Mario 3, not available. Punch-Out. You're right. The prices are pre-pandemic. $18 for Zelda.
Yeah, they're all pre-pandemic prices. They have not adjusted.
So this might have been dead for 2 years. We just haven't known. Contra's $20. That's pre-pandemic. That's where it was at the fall, basically, before 2020. Terminator 2, wow. Can I filter on available? Like, I mean, in stock? I guess you click in stock and you see what's available. There it is. Yeah, nothing's available except for the Mega Cat games. Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing's available. I'm going to do Genesis now for the hell of it. So I guess what we're trying to say is that it's officially over. If it wasn't before the pandemic, it might have been, it would have happened anyway. If not,
I don't know if they've officially put a bullet in it, but they're definitely not focusing on it.
I mean, the fact that I can't even find the Sega Genesis section, or I try to guess what the Super Nintendo section is. I guess if I put in Super Mario World, can I get to the Super Nintendo section? I just want to see what even the placeholders are, and I can't even find it. Oh, here we go, Super Mario World. Okay, I found it. Super Dash Nintendo. I'll just do that one real quick. Because there was always a lot in NES, and there was a decent amount of Super. Okay, what is actually in stock? Let's just click that. Nothing. There's just Mega Cat games, and the Return of Double Dragon is available. The one that came out, what was that? When did that come out? 2 years ago? Or was that re-released 2 years ago?
Which one?
Return of Double Dragon, which was the one for Super, and they re-released it.
Oh.
Was that 2 years ago? I forget. So that one's available. So technically, that's right, compatible with aftermarket SNES systems only. We covered that.
Yeah.
It's like 2 years ago.
Weird one.
Mm-hmm. They spelled compatible wrong on GameStop's site. Compatible with aftermarket. Come on, GameStop, use a Grammarly plugin. Compatible. That's my new
term. Yeah, that's right. The retroism release of it. Yeah, that could only be... That was a nightmare.
That was a story.
Yeah.
We're like, that's ridiculous.
It's absurd.
Yeah, how do we forget that? Wow, there's too many topics. So anyway, so I guess what the moral of the story is that they probably made a little bit of money, but once they invested all the time and effort into this, it probably was enough for it to be worth their time. And we don't even know. This is what someone brought up to me. We don't know. I'm hoping with all my heart. I think they ended up, when they really got out of this stuff, they did not throw this stuff out. They liquidated to larger online retro retailers. That's what the word was a few years ago.
Yeah.
I think they were starting to do that before it was totally
places
dead.
Places like, I don't know,
Lukey Games.
JJ Oldies.
DK Oldies.
DK Oldies. I don't know.
There's like two or three of them that, you know, they go, the ones that use all the bots to basically buy the lots, which we learned was a thing. It was like, there's a reason why all those lots get bought out by, you know, they all have seller... Allegedly, they have different buying accounts from selling accounts to do that. So, that's the end of GameStop Retro, I guess. What else can you say?
Not much. Moving on.
I'm going to pour one out. Pour out one like, was that Boys in the Hood? You didn't pour one out, you drank. That's more of an insult. All right, Ian, we have a Patreon.
We do.
Whole topic.
Patreon.com/CU Podcast.
And what do you get when you sign up for the
Patreon? You sign up and you get the full video podcast available to you. You get a monthly hangout, perhaps, if you'd like. Those are always a good time. I do a writing about once a week. What will this week's be? I don't know. Last week was crochet. We'll see. And you get to vote in these poll topics. We got two for you.
We have two topics, and I just pasted it in right there. Wow. This is a landslide one. My finger's on the pulse right here. In second place, at 17%. Doesn't mean it's going away. Would a monetary or other indicator cause you to sell your game collection? 17%. And in first place, what would your lives be like if, in quotes, Pat the NES Punk never took off? Interesting question, Ian.
It is. I don't know. I would, if this had never taken off, I think I would probably be doing something completely different, of course, than I am right now. What a way to state the obvious.
That's it. Next topic.
No.
Next one.
So if I had, if this had not taken off and I had not been able to do Luna part-time, I don't know that I would have stayed at Luna. And if I hadn't stayed at Luna, I don't know what I would be doing for work right now. But I'm not even sure I would still be in San Diego.
Wow. Did the podcast keep you in San Diego?
Two things kept me in San Diego at a time where I was ready to leave, and that was the podcast and my relationship with Vani.
The podcast kept you here even before we were making money? Really doing it?
Well, no, but once Vani and I basically, you know, decided we were getting married, once this started to take off a little bit, those two things were like, okay, I could see myself in San Diego for the next foreseeable future. You know, I was like, instead of thinking about, hey, I might move within the next year or two, you know, I was like, okay, I'm gonna be here for at least another 5-10 years.
Podcast didn't make any real money for like 2 years.
No,
it didn't take off at all for like a year and a half.
I was gonna say about a year in was when it started to offer me something that was a noticeable amount of money in addition to what I was making at Luna.
Sure.
So, yeah, I don't know what I'd be doing. I can tell you this, though. I wouldn't be doing anything online. I don't think I would be.
No Ian's Happy Handhelds channel?
No.
No Twitch? Is there anyone doing handhelds on Twitch? Maybe Ian could do the handhelds on Twitch. There it is.
I enjoy...
you know what? That might take off.
I enjoy doing this podcast. I enjoy doing Extra Napkins, which is the food podcast I do. But by doing both of these, I really realized how much I don't like filming. I don't like scripts.
You didn't like the Caltron video, Ian.
I don't like scripts. I don't like...
You don't like acting.
I don't like editing.
You're good at acting.
I hate it, though. But thank you. But I don't like it. I don't like editing. So, and... If I could go back and do it all over again, I'd be much more private. Privacy is something that I have learned that I very much enjoy, and I shot most of that to shit early on. So yeah, if I wasn't doing this, I don't think I'd be doing anything online. It's not
you shot that shit because you did the podcast, or because you incorporated the work life into the podcast?
I incorporated work life into the podcast, but I also I'm just more open. I've been more open online than I think I would be if I had a chance to go back and do it all over again.
But does that really affect you? I mean, does it actually affect you day to day, or is that more just like you when you think about it, people in the world know you and like your habits, and it just sort of bothers you?
It affects me enough day to day, especially at work.
Okay.
So yeah. Anyways,
but outside of work though, do you really care that someone?
No, that doesn't bother me so much. But still, I would be more private than I am now. Yeah. So I don't think I would be doing anything online. I think that's the big takeaway: is if this hadn't taken off, I wouldn't be doing anything online. I'd have very little online presence.
I would just still bump into you every month and talk to you for 2 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
You never told me to leave. I always appreciate it. Like, no, Pat, you're bothering me. I knew when to step away from the customers. Even when I was crazier 10 years ago, you know, I would not bother the customers. I would just step back.
I really appreciate that, too.
I would step back.
I don't mind when like...
Ian got through his day quicker when Pat showed up. Sometimes with Frank, drunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they'll say Frank was mostly drunk when he showed up at the store.
Mostly. What about you?
That's an interesting question, because to me, the YouTube channel was first and foremost tied to two things: my love of film and wanting to get into film, and love of collecting games. So it was the marriage of two that started the channel and doing stupid scripted stuff that for some reason people liked. And people were charmed by it, I guess, even though I never really made a living. I did not make a living off of it, obviously. So if it never took off, it would not have established the platform in order to do a podcast and in order to do other things and to do books or whatever else. Would I still be able to have done those things? Yes, but then who the hell would have known about a podcast? Who would have known about, to the same extent, like an NES book? It would have been a lot more difficult to market that stuff or people be aware of you. So I don't know. I was at my wit's end with my day job. Ian knows that. I've told the stories before. Yeah. And it did not make me enough money to put up with it. I don't talk money that much, but if I told you how much I was making doing that day job where I was slaving away and getting no respect for versus now, you'd say, Pat, you're stupid. You should have quit even before that. And I should have. And I almost did. I wanted to quit almost a year after I moved here.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, as soon as I knew you didn't want to stay with it.
I moved here 2009, August, and my plan was to quit within a couple of years. And unfortunately, it was, I quit 2012. So it took me 3 years to quit. That summer, 2012, was when I quit. And I was depressed. It took me like almost a year to recover. We didn't start the podcast for another almost a year.
Yeah.
After I quit. And I still did videos and things like that. But like, I was like... in my own head at that point. I didn't know. I was directionless. I was rudderless at that point and didn't know what direction to go in. There was no Twitch yet or streaming things. YouTube, you still couldn't, it was still, you couldn't make that much money on YouTube. It was still blip.tv. So there was not a lot of options versus even now if you got into it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot. It was totally different, the online digital world in 2012 when I quit my job. I might have said, fuck it. I didn't have a huge amount of savings, but I'll take a chance and I'll just dive and think about what would happen if I did. I'll just dive into writing and doing that 100%, and I'll just get an agent, try to get an agent, and I had a couple of screenplays written. Maybe I'll write another one and then try to shop them and go that traditional route, because that's why I moved out to San Diego. I probably would have done that and seen where that would have got me, or try to write a book. But again, it's like it's so hard to get your foot in the door, even if you're a good writer, just because there's so many writers. You know, I have the book on my wall still. It's like, you know, literary agents list from like 2008 or 2007 that my sister got. So like, I would have found something to do. It's just, what would I have found? Would I have stayed with somewhat the entertainment side, since I had done a radio show even back in college, so I was used to it. I knew I was good at it, and I can carry a radio show or a podcast. Or would I have just went, fuck it, fall off the map, you won't know who I am, and I'll just be a writer, and you'll find that out. Which is funny, because now I do write, and I end up writing other things, but I don't make money writing fiction, which was my goal in coming out to San Diego, was to make money writing fiction. I have not made money writing fiction. I write the scripts for the NES Punk videos, but that doesn't count. I mean, like, actually writing fiction.
Sure.
I guess you can say in a roundabout way I have, because, you know, you write your own videos, or you write some of the ABGN videos, and you put words in Frank's mouth in videos, and so that's... But you know what I mean? Like, I wanted to sell a screenplay. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to sell a book, which I still can do. I still want to write a book. I still want to write it. Before the pandemic, my goal was, if I didn't have all this other stuff going on, I wanted to write a children's book and a children's adventure book. And I still want to do that, because that's what I used to do when I was a kid. I used to write adventure short stories.
That'd be fun.
So that'd be fun. And it wouldn't require a huge amount of time. And so maybe if in a few years, maybe my life's in a different spot. Maybe I go back to that as a goal. Maybe. Sure. Here's the thing. It's harder to have these goals and things you want to try when you live in an area where it costs a lot of money to live.
Sure.
Obviously. So you have to more take care of yourself first before you can, you know, if you're living somewhere else where it's $700 a month for rent. Yeah, that's a lot different than San Diego. You know, that's a lot different.
Yeah.
Or $700 a month for a mortgage, or $1,000 for a mortgage, which there are places in the U.S. that are that cheap. When I hear that, I'm like, wow, I should live there. Like, what am I doing? You know, I should live there. I'll bring Ian along. We'll do the podcast, and the podcast makes the same amount of money no matter where it records from. But living's a lot cheaper, and that's probably what Ian alluded to. It's like, well, I could have been gone, because San Diego is not cheap to live. So, would you have found another podcast, Ian, if there wasn't a CU podcast?
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't think I would have done anything.
But you wouldn't have been working at Luna. So I kept you working at Luna in a way.
In a weird roundabout way. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Interesting.
But you didn't go part-time for years after the podcast. You were still working mostly full-time.
I think it was 2 years.
Ooh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Up to two,
I think. All right.
Yeah, anyway.
All right. Is that a good enough answer?
Yeah.
I still would have had nice hair, though. I think that's... No?
I think you would have gotten... I think you would have gotten the hair.
The hair... not that I was going bald because of my high stressful job, but stress fucking kills you.
It does.
It kills your mind. It kills your body. It kills your immune system. Stress fucks you up, and they're still discovering the ways it like ruins your body. So I'm not saying if you have a stressful job to quit tomorrow, but think about how
work
much
on it.
But think about how much happier you would be, even if you made a little bit less money, if you can do something else or you're happy doing it. That's what I always try to tell people. Just
when I first started working at Luna, when I went full time at Luna, I took a big hit on money, because I was waiting tables and doing catering before that. And,
a lot of tips, a lot of cash. Right?
And if you're good at it, and I don't mean to fucking...
I want you to be my waiter one day.
I don't mean to blow myself, but I was a pretty good waiter. And you can make money. And I did. Sure. I made a lot of money waiting tables. And to go from... But it's high fucking stress work. And after, you know, over a decade of doing it, I was done with it. I would have rather have taken less money, but bankable money, than work another day waiting tables.
So you were in the same boat as me.
Yeah.
But you actually were making more money with your first job, previous job, and I wasn't.
Yeah.
I was not.
Sure.
I could not afford a house with that job. If I was still at that job by this point, I guess I would have moved up. I don't think I'd be making six figures even at that job. And for San Diego, that's not enough to buy a house.
Right.
Like, unless you have a partner that's also making around that. That's what it comes down to. So, but thank you all for the support, especially on the Patreon. Appreciate that as well. Patreon helps as well.
That's right.
We should have got the Patreon going a little bit sooner. We didn't do the Patreon for like 2 years about.
I know.
And that didn't even take off for like a year. So patreon.com/CU podcast. This segment of the CU podcast is sponsored by Jelly Transparent Face Masks.
One thing I've noticed at work during the pandemic is that when you can't see each other's faces, when they're all masked up, it really kind of changes how we interact with each other.
Sure.
When you can't see smiles or read lips, it changes our comprehension. And then you have customers who are harder of hearing, and the ability to see you know, the person's face really kind of helps, you know, understand everything, keep it moving.
And it makes it just a little bit more normal. So that's where Jelly Transparent Face Mask comes into play. I don't demonstrate. You know, put one of these on while Ian explains it.
Yeah, it's clinically tested, has filtration efficiency measured to be 99.7%, has an anti-fog surface, which is perfect for all temperatures, and it's transparent, which, as we said, is helpful for people who rely on lip reading. It's got a silicone rubber gasket to support the nose for better comfort. Look at Pat.
Yeah, you
real
can see
comfortable
me.
There.
You can see me smile with it.
And it has adjustable straps and available in three colors, a white, a black, and a pink.
All right, so if you want to save 10% right now on your jelly mask, you can use code CUPODCAST at jellym, JELLIM.com. Again, use code CUPODCAST to save 10% off at jellym.com. All right, we got voice messages. What's now becoming a favorite? You can go to anchor.fm/CUPODCAST. Try to keep it a little short if you can. You know, say, hey, here's my question, Pat. I'm from Antarctica. We're experimenting, and there's this thing that's killing everyone. Here we go. Did that take place in Antarctica, the thing? Where did the thing take place? Was it Antarctica?
Yes. Technically, it's in Antarctica. It was filmed in Alaska, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Sure, it's a little easier to get to Alaska than Antarctica to film. All right.
God, what a great fucking movie.
I still haven't seen the whole thing of the 82.
What?
No, I haven't. That was my reaction to Big Trouble Little China. That was my exact reaction.
Holy shit!
I know, I gotta see it because I love Kurt Russell.
Wow!
I know.
Wow! Wow!
Okay, how was the second remake? The recent one from the past 10 years, was that decent?
I haven't watched it.
Okay, here's the
first one.
There's
no reason to.
Okay.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Marty calling from Long Island, big fan of the show.
Long Island!
This is for Ian. Jared Leto, Joker, Jesus, Jared Leto,
thank
Joker,
you.
Jesus, Jared Leto, Joker, Jesus, Joker in a movie, Snyder Power.
Oh, nice. Yeah. It's good.
All right, thanks, Marty. Next time you just go right into the bit, I think. you can just go right into the bit.
Marty, can you believe that Pat has not seen the entirety of the thing?
I never brought that up before. I never not bring that up before. The next one is time sensitive, so usually I don't care. But next one, here's the next one.
Ian, Pat, Justin Macaluso here, mayor candidate for San Antonio, Texas. It's been a while since I've asked anybody this question, but I'm just curious, what video games are you currently playing? Me, I'm in the middle of Doom 64. Anyways, I enjoy the podcast, and y'all take care. Thanks.
So I looked up Justin on Ballotpedia, which is a great website for politics. He is on the ballot.
Oh.
And it is, I think, May 1st is the election for San Antonio.
Oh, all right.
Well, he said San Antonio, right?
Yeah, he said San Antonio.
So good luck, Justin. But looking at the ballot, there's like 20 people on the ballot, so I don't know if you're going to... But hey, we can do a little sweetheart deal if you get in. I know a napkin supplier that could supply the cafeteria at the...
a napkin supplier,
I don't
huh?
know. You know those sweetheart deals in politics?
What am I playing right now? I'm playing Monster Hunter right now. That's pretty much all I'm playing. I'm trying to focus on that. And I just got, actually, just yesterday got my copy of Scott Pilgrim in the mail from Limited Run. So I'll probably be starting to play through that.
Oh,
shortly.
Very nice. Is that your first Limited Run game?
No, I have a couple.
A couple?
I have a few.
I still don't have any somehow.
Really?
I don't. And I know the people that run the company. I don't like asking for stuff.
I was going to buy...
What was the one I bought?
I bought all of this.
No, I'm just saying. Like, it's you think I'd have one by now.
Sure.
You know, I just don't. And it's not because I don't like the company, obviously, or anything. I just don't... I don't want to buy and just put... I don't want to buy and put it on the shelf and not play it. You know,
sure.
I'm afraid of doing that.
Yeah.
For that. But I should for them because I like those guys. And they hopefully like me. Okay. Next...
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. Happy spring, guys. My question to you guys is, what's you guys' take on expensive games like Klonoa on the PlayStation 1, Parasite Eve 2, and Silent Hill? I personally don't think that those games should be past the $100 mark, but that's my opinion. Anyways, guys, much love and respect, and happy spring. Wishing you guys a safe one. This is Elwedo signing off.
We just talked about PS1 games. It's so weird. Because I was going through with Ian. I was like, I have a lot of PS1 games that are worth money. That the same thing like the GameCube that 5-6 years ago they weren't worth anything and now they're worth a ton. Some of this stuff.
So I mean, from a buyer's standpoint, and even
it's
from
capitalism.
Even from a seller's standpoint, I don't want the games to be over $100. I've got to pay more to get them. People are a little bit pickier about, you know, the condition once games start getting up there. So I don't want them to be that. But I mean, what we want doesn't matter. It's what the market decides, and the market for games right now is dumb crazy.
Sure. Yeah. It's one of those things that now. It's always that what? It's the 20 to 25 years. Obviously, COVID helped push up all this stuff.
Yes.
It's a weird anomaly because none of us saw that coming. Where it's like, oh, we need to spend money on stuff because we're all indoors and we have extra money potentially from stimulus and from PPP and other stuff and unemployment. And that drove prices up. No one saw that coming. So whenever I try to say, Pat, you were wrong about the retro game prices going down, it's like, no, we weren't because they were happening for most of these systems. And then it got a little shot in the arm, pardon the pun, because of COVID. Yeah, I'm just shocked. I have a disc only Klonoa I told Ian about. I'm like, I picked it up at the swap meet. I can probably get $200 just for that disc now.
Yeah.
It's like, it's nuts. I should have pieced this stuff together. If I'd known this would have exploded, I could have pieced. I have like random PS1 games where it's like, oh, I'm missing one of the three discs or I'm missing the manual. I never thought about putting it together because PS1 is not my console. But if I'm going to sell some of this stuff, I probably should have. It's right. Kind of too late for something like Klonoa, which complete goes for several hundred dollars. You don't have to do that. I just think it's interesting. Everything, like I said, everything that happens with everything, I guess. All right, next one.
Hey, Pat and Ian. It's Michael from Colorado. Longtime caller, first time listener. Pat, I remember you had once mentioned finding night vision goggles at the flea market.
Not a goggles.
What are some of the best non-gaming related finds that you two have found at the swap meet? Thanks. Take care.
It was a scope, military grade, I think, second gen night vision scope, which I had to get fixed. That was worth a grand at the time. I bought it for $10.
Wow.
I remember at the time being like, wow, this is cool. I probably should have bought it regardless, but I looked it up on my phone because like, it's hard to like look that stuff. It's not going to be on eBay. I'm like, oh, I think it's this goggle. I turned right around and said, hey, I'll take this. I didn't sell it. I probably should have. I just kept because it was so fucking cool. You can literally go in a dark room and turn it on. Like, wow, I can see everything. That's how you can kill people. I guess it's amazing. It's somewhere in the house. I kind of know where it is. I lost it for a year after the move. I didn't know where it is. I thought I let someone borrow it, and I got freaked out. But no, I still have it. So that was the top one for me, for sure. There's been a couple others. I like stupid shit. Like, oh, I find a shoe rack for $10 you put together. That's like $70 on. Like, it's always the practical stuff that I found the little big ladder. Remember, I was talking to Ian, or someone said, yeah. I need this ladder.
Yes.
I went to the swap meet that Sunday, and this is when I was not going to swap meet every week, and I found it for $40, and that's like a $300 ladder. And I was like, this is awesome. That's where I get more pumped about than anything else.
I honestly, when I've done thrifting, it's almost been entirely for video game related stuff. But I did find, I'd say my two favorite finds that aren't video game related. I found a four-track digital recorder at a electronics recyclables place once. And one of my favorite pickups, non-gaming related, I bought the 12-inch single of Sean Paul's Temperature for $1. That was a wonderful find.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's probably not worth a dollar. It's probably worth 50 cents. But I bought it, and I was happy.
Hey, Pat and Ian, Tommy Tallarico checking in again, okay? I just wanted to let you losers in on some hot new IPs I just scored for some brand new Amico games that are coming out already in the works. We got Rise of the Robot Championship Edition, okay? Next, finally, by popular demand, we got a Big Bad Beetleborg game coming out, okay? We got Baby Moses Deluxe Edition, and last but not least, the long-awaited sequel to Plumbers Don't Wear Ties. Okay, goof on that. I dare you.
I know that's not really Tommy because Plumbers Don't Wear Ties would never.
It's
be
too
on.
New. Well, that's the thing. Stuff is too new. But yes, that's a adults only. Game.
Yes.
Well, that's here's the thing, fake Tommy. I'd have more respect for you because those are properties that are at least within the past. Rise of the Robots was what, like 95, 96?
Game is awful.
They just announced the Harlem Globetrotters license for the Amico. So we're talking about stuff that peaked in like 1972, along with Evil Knievel. That's That's the license they're getting.
I mean, I love me the Globetrotters.
Oh, who doesn't? But that's not something kids know about or care about.
Hey,
or,
it's for the kids.
It is for the kids, but that's not a property that no one knows about. I think they came here like a few years ago.
They're here like every year. They play up at
Sports Arena.
Fucking Sports Arena.
I want to say this. I want to address something real quick.
It's the general's year.
I still feel bad for ruining the official Intellivision Amico Reddit. Because it's been taken over as a corporate Reddit account, which I'm not sure if that's against or not the terms of service for Reddit. But there is an alternative Intellivision Amico Reddit. It's Intellivision _Amico subreddit, where a lot of the people that were either kicked off the official Amico Reddit, and these are people that were looking forward to this, were just asking questions, like just sensible, rational business questions, are now forced to be on this Reddit. The CEO, Tommy Tallarico, Ian, posted on there, finally, now he discovered all those, I have to try to, you know, get on these people's good side. He did a post called Into the Lion's Den. And my name came up a few times, as it's apt to do in these conversations. And yours come up to a lesser extent, but, you know, I take the brunt usually, but that's okay. And then I don't usually respond to a lot of the personal attacks and slander against my character that Tommy Tallarico does and usually tweets out. I have him muted, so I don't see it. But I will address something he said here, because he just makes shit up to try to make me look worse than what I really am. And listen, I'm not the best person in the world, and I rub people the wrong way. But I will respond to some of this where I know it's outright lies. And I own my faults, usually, too. Someone talked about, I guess, they brought me up about, you know, smear campaigns against me that Tommy, and Tommy has engaged in smear campaign against me and enlisting minor sycophantic YouTubers to make attack videos on eating me, but he said something in particular. He said that I throw people on the subreddit under the bus. I don't know anyone on the subreddit. I never throw anyone under the bus. I don't know what he's talking about. He throws you guys under the bus to others every chance he gets. I don't know what he's talking about here. But then he says this, Ian. We do have a lot of the same friends, and they find his behavior regarding me and Amico appalling. He's lost a lot of friends and followers because of his attitude towards us and many others in the retro community. Ian, do you think me and Tommy Tallarico have the same friends?
No.
A lot of the same friends? No. Have you lost any friends because of your outspokenness about the Amico?
No.
Has anyone even behind the scenes come to you or has said, hey, Ian, you're being a little too far, or Pat's going a little too far, and you guys got to watch yourselves?
No.
Has anyone who has ever, and we know people that are in charge of conventions and expos, have anyone then ever said, you know, guys, we can't ask you back, that Amico stuff, that's going too far?
Yeah, no.
And I know about 8 to 10 people that personally run these conventions too. So this is just another example of Tommy. This is where it becomes personal, where I have to respond to something like this. And, you know, the expression, you shouldn't get down in the mud with the pig because the pig doesn't mind it. Mm-hmm. And Tommy is a pig when it comes to this stuff. But this is stuff that he'll have to answer for eventually, stuff like this to me. He'll have to answer for stuff like this. No one fucking cares. My friends either don't know about this stuff, and these are people that are online or YouTubers, or when they find out about it, they laugh it off and know it's a joke. It's a fucking joke, the console. That's what it comes down to. But it's just another way for him to try to wage war because his console product is not doing well when it finally comes out, and it won't. So you attack the messengers. That's all I'm going to say, unless you have anything else to add.
No.
Did I cover it?
I think you did.
Ian, I'm not going to be friends with you anymore. You talk about a console that looks like shit.
Yeah.
Hey guys, Vinny Vicious here. In a recent episode of the CU podcast, someone asked about punk, and Ian said he liked one or two bands. But come on, Ian. Didn't you once let a bunch of stranger punk kids in your house and discuss starting a band with one?
What?
Aren't you part of a Game Boy collective that puts out a not-for-profit fanzine that supports grassroots movements? Didn't you have a writing credit in the hardcore band Go Go Go's record line?
I do.
What? Don't you DJ DIY house parties? And didn't you sub in Capitalist Casualties when their drummers was in the hospital?
No.
Come on, Ian. You're pretty punk.
Well, I think you know that person, Ian.
Thank you, Rick. I do feel more punk now. I appreciate you saying
that.
You
didn't sub in a band called Capitalist Casualties?
No, that was just a joke.
I was going to say, I wouldn't be surprised.
I would, but I can't play the drums.
What was the one thing he said that you wrote something for Go Go Go?
I have a writing credit. So his band Go Go Go, there is a song about PewDiePie. And
what?
He quoted me saying that PewDiePie has a sewage pump heart.
That's in a song.
It's in a song.
And you never told me about that?
No. Yes, I did.
Is that online? What type of genre?
Like speedcore, like very, very fast.
You gotta send me
just
that.
Just a drummer and
right. Now I'm interested.
And guitar.
Okay. You're punking away.
I've got the tape.
I'm not sure all that qualified for the punk attitude, but you know. Yeah, punk's more of an attitude than, you know, the hair or the lifestyle or the music.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Kate from Texas.
Hey, Kate.
I have a question for Pat. In all of your travels to Texas for conventions, what is your favorite memory of Texas? Thanks for your time and your attention, and keep up the great work, guys. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Kate. I don't get a lot of travel time when I go to these conventions. So I can just say Cheddar's because I love that chain. I really enjoyed the when I went to I went to Austin Classic Game Fest and Norm was there. We went to this is the best. It was a dry rub barbecue house. I went with OK Chief. We love OK Chief. I think you met OK Chief in person yet. He would love you. He's best guy, big hearted guy. Brought us to this. It was a place that was featured and I think in it was the barbecue place that was featured in Smoking the Bandit. And it was the greatest barbecue I ever had. Like I said, it was a dry rub barbecue.
I love dry rub barbecue.
They brought us to the back where they showed the giant smoker, which was like 140 degrees. You can't stand close. You know what I mean? Like, that was a great memory. I have not been to the National Video Game Museum yet in Frisco. I got to get out to that at some point. Unless I'm banned because I criticized the Amico. I have not had a chance to sightsee, unfortunately, in Texas. I have not. You know, and it's a shame because like whenever you go there, especially Retropalooza, you know, the Ranger Stadium is right there and Dallas Cowboys Stadium is like right there. They're like so close and they haven't had a chance yet. All right, it's next.
Hey guys, Josh from Southern Indiana here. Regarding your Nintendo remakes, I was just throwing in my two cents of Balloon Fight. Love the game and I know you guys like it too, and it would make a great, maybe even like a Super Mario 35 thing for Switch. But yeah, modern HD remake.
Ian's into
really,
it.
Really killer for that game. Get rid of the darn bonus, because that just takes up too much time. Take it easy.
I think Balloon Fight would actually make a really good Battle Royale type game. That could be a lot of fun.
Uh-oh. Nintendo, you hear that? Is this the 35th anniversary of Balloon Fight? 86? Did that come out earlier in Japan?
I don't know.
Then 86? Let's look it up. Balloon Fight. Uh-oh. Fives and zeros. When was Balloon Fight released? It was 84 initially. Oh, because was it a VS game in the arcade?
Yes.
Okay, we missed it. Damn it, we missed it.
Oh, no. We'll have to wait for the 40th anniversary of Balloon Fight.
Damn, what to be the podcast for what? Four more years. Four more years. We just missed it. Oh, no, two more years. Three? I can't do any math. Yeah, it came out NES June 86. All right, we'll hit it in June. Well, 2 months from now, we can do it. 35th. Fives and zeros. Next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Phil from Wayne, New Jersey, calling again.
Jersey!
Pat, just wanted to let you know I actually grew up around the corner from the fire station where they used to do the toy show.
Yeah! Twice a month.
I wanted to see if you guys think we have come to the end of the mini console craze. There really doesn't seem to be anything new coming out on the horizon, at least from announcements. Love the show, guys. Thanks so much, as always.
Oh, yeah, Sony killed it. I mean, you can probably blame Sony for putting the nail in the coffin of the minis.
Yeah,
because it was just an ill-conceived in price and in quality and in games offered. Where like they not saying they single-handedly did it, because at that point you already had Genesis and Super and NES, and then I mean Turbo did come out afterwards, but no one knows Turbo graphics,
right? And that was more niche.
Nietzsche? I never read Nietzsche.
But I think in terms of the popular ones, yeah, Sony killed it.
I mean,
maybe Genesis came out after that, and that was fine too.
Was that after that or before?
Yeah, it was after. Fairly certain that was after.
I'll look that up real quick.
Yeah, might as well. But there isn't a whole lot. I mean, all the big popular ones are done. Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, done. Nintendo said they weren't going to do a 64 one right away, and I they will eventually, but I, as I've said about it before, I think Nintendo values those games more. They're not going to give you 20 of those. They're not going to give you 20 of those on an $80 to $100 console when they're still... Well, they value them at about $20 a piece, as evidenced by the 3D All-Stars collection.
Oh, you're right. The PlayStation Classic was December 2018. That seems like it was like last year. Or that wow, that was 2.5 years ago. And then the Genesis one was a year after that. So you basically had 1 year. You had NES Classic, Super Nintendo the next year. PlayStation tried to do theirs and then the Genesis.
Yeah.
After that, though, you're running out of steam, especially for North America, for consoles that people cared about, and you can make a classic of cheap. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
I mean, people keep saying, why don't you do an N64 one? Well, there are the emulation issues that you would not be able to do it properly, which I get to come back to. Or else Nintendo probably would have done it by now.
No, like I just said, I don't think they would have. Nintendo values those games at a much higher price point.
But the... I guess. Yeah, they did the Super Mario re-release, 64. I guess. Yeah, you're right.
They value those too high. They're not going... They will eventually, but they're not going to shove 20 N64 games onto a $100 unit.
You would get like 20 games. You get 20 games, and there would not be GoldenEye, and people would be pissed off just because of that alone. Yeah. Probably. Maybe that's why I did it, because of GoldenEye.
But they value them higher. They value that's them right. exactly at about $20.
That's... Yeah.
So I think so it's going to be a while.
You are? No Game Boy one. Remember the Game Boy classic rumors? But that'd be its own handheld, though. How can you do that?
Right.
That's kind of... I'd be really interested to see how well that would sell, though. We always talk about how Nintendo's like ignored the Game Boy, especially the OG Game Boy, and even Game Boy Color. It's not really a thing they talk about. Or, you know, it's like... It's almost like the Virtual Boy. It's like a forgotten history, almost. All right, we'll do a few more here.
Hey, what's up, Pat and Ian? My question to you guys is, what is your most fond memory playing poker, whether it's biggest win or most fun had? Personally, I think No Limit Texas Hold'em is one of the greatest games of all time. Anyways, love the show. You guys are both awesome.
Thanks, Jonathan. No, I love Texas Hold'em. I wish I got into it earlier. And I did, if there was not a pandemic last year and it was a normal year, I was thinking about going to the World Series of Poker. Which would have been in July last year. I was actually thinking about it. If I had the money to try it, I was thinking about that. In terms of, I play mostly online now, just with friends. I've only done in person a handful of times, and that wasn't true. No Limit, so you can't really say that. Ian had experience playing, I think, before me, in terms of what was like the best win, I guess, or best moment you had.
So yeah, no, I remember it clearly because it was the last time I played poker. So I like poker. Like it a lot. I think it's a super fun game, but I don't play it. I don't really gamble. But it was before I moved out here, I got into playing poker with some of the cooks at the Italian restaurant that I worked at. And I played like 3 games with them, and I left every game up. And my last game, I ended up walking with like, I think it was like 110 on a $20 buy-in. And I stopped playing after that. It wasn't
you more than quadrupled your money.
Yeah, I made a lot of money that night. That's in terms great. Of like what I left, and I was just like, I'm done. Those 3 games, like I was riding such a high after those
was
3
it,
games.
You're catching cards, or you're just playing the best poker you ever played?
I was just playing really good poker, and that third game, it was I caught good cards too. But it was just I was on top of it, and I was like, I love the game, but I just don't. I don't need to gamble, is what it comes down to.
To me, it's not only the gambling; it's the skill competition.
Yes, it is, and I like. I just don't like playing stuff for money. I don't really do stocks. I don't really gamble. I don't really do anything like that. I touch on it, and it's fun every once in a while. But it's not something I've ever wanted to make.
You got into the Dogecoin?
Yeah, it's not something. it's not something I ever wanted to make.
Hope you cashed out.
It's not something I wanted to ever make a regular occurrence.
We play like a Zumo. It's like 9 people, so it is cash, but it's a small amount. Buy-in, it's like $50 buy-in. So you can rebuy, but most you won't lose more than for $200 if you buy in 4 times, but that's rare. And I usually at least break even. The best time I had was breaking even because I was not catching cards and I folded hands that my.
So you had to play well.
I played well to break even.
Sure, that's exciting.
That was the most fun. I don't have fun sometimes, even if I win, if I feel like there was shitty. I'm the type of a player where I'll make a good decision, and this happens to everyone. But yeah, whenever I go in with if someone goes all in, I call them with aces, I lose like most of the time. That's just my luck. I lose to queens or to jacks or to tens. And I'm just like, you're supposed to win those like 80% of the time. You're supposed to win those. And it happens a lot to me where I don't mind those, but I'm like, okay, it's a bad beat. But I more like when I make a good decision. And a good decision means saving a lot of money, not just winning money. And that happened to me this one game where I was like, wow. It's like, yeah, I folded like a full house when the other person had a better full house. Like, it's had a weird feeling. Stuff like that.
Right.
Where you're supposed to lose money, but something tells you based upon how they're betting and the type of player where, okay, I'm beat here, even though most of the time I should be good. That was the most fun I had. I ended up winning like a dollar. But I was like, no. I played the best poker of my life.
Like you
if
said,
I had decent cards, I would have won. You know what I mean?
I didn't play poker because I wanted to win money. I played poker because it's a fun game.
It's a challenge.
And money is part of it.
Yes. Yes. So that's the thing.
Yeah, you could have a really fun game where you walk away with, like you said, a dollar or two. But, you know, getting to that point was the excitement.
Yeah, where you're engaged.
Yep.
But usually if you get a bunch of crappy cards, you do not have a good night. But usually it evens out throughout the night, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you start out with bad cards and it doesn't get any better. But usually you start out with bad cards and it evens out because of its randomness. There's a mean there. All right, we got one more.
One more.
Hi, guys. This is Jose from Michigan calling this time with a question for Ian. Ian, do game store employees have an advantage when it comes to acquiring games for their collection? It seems like you might not have to do much game hunting if the games are coming to you. Or is there some kind of rule for game stores in which employees can't buy games that are traded in until they have been made available to customers first? How does that work for Luna? Thank you. That's all I have. You have a good day.
Thanks for the question. It's a good question. A little bit of both, actually. So, yes, it is one of the perks of working at a game store is you do get to see every trade-in that comes through. And yeah, it does make it a little bit easier. Obviously, the owner doesn't care. If it comes in, he's going to sell it to you. And he'll sell it for generally. He'll give you a decent discount on it. but, you know, he's making the money either way. So, you know, selling to customers is fine. The first few years, any new game store employee works there, I would say for the first 6 months to a year, they're definitely setting aside piles and taking stuff home. But with every game store employee I've ever seen, eventually you just kind of get numb to it. You know, you see all these trade-ins all the time, and almost the opposite starts to happen. A game comes in, and you might really want it, but you go, at least this is how I think. I know this is how some of my coworkers think. You go, put it out there. I'm going to see it again in 2-3 weeks anyways.
Sure.
So, you know, it is very exciting at first. it's very exciting at first, but eventually you start. It's part of what helped me get rid of my NES collections. Part of it, you realize just how fluid this shit is. You know, with the exception of super rare games, you know there's always going to be another copy of Contra that comes around or another copy of something that comes around if you're willing to bide your time. So I think it naturally happens less and less with employees the longer they're there. What is that coming from?
It's my email. Oh. Sorry, shutting it down.
That's all right. But I was gonna say something else. We do try to, especially around the holidays, though. We do try to make sure stuff gets put up front.
Sure,
we definitely we hoard stuff less. And luckily, with the people we've hired, they've all been good people who realize that hey, you can't hold a bunch of this stuff, or you can't take everything good that comes around, especially around the holidays, because people want to see that you have variety. So if we're really low on certain things, or if it's been a long time since we got a really good Switch trade in. You know, but there's games in there we've been looking for. More often than not, we're going to put them on the shelf and give people a shot at them.
Now, have you ever felt guilty because you picked up a game, then someone came in like the next day and said, oh, you have this game? And you're like, no, we don't have it because you just took it home. That ever happened?
No, I mean,
is that rare?
Or
you want weird shit like Mahjong games or a PC Engine game that no one else probably want?
No, it's just, like I said, we pay for it. I don't ever feel that bad about it. And we do try to give customers first shot on a lot of stuff.
Except for Pat when he finds out a big Vectrex collection comes in.
Yeah.
And It's gone before Pat knows about it.
That went super fast.
Yeah, it did, Ian. It absolutely went fast.
All right, well, that's that. Excuse me.
All right, that's it for the podcast.
It's this episode of the CE Podcast.
Nice. Great. Streamline, one minute, 1 hour, 36 minutes. There you go. That's
beautiful.
It's nice. You can get back to having Spike lean on top of him while he's crocheting.
Yeah, I'm going to go home. Probably going to take a nap with Spike on my chest. Then I'm going to wake up, go to the grocery store. I'm going to make
up.
Beef with broccoli.
Wait, wake up.
I'm going to try to make scallion pancakes. What
the fuck are scallion pancakes?
Have you ever had scallion pancakes?
No.
It's a Chinese food restaurant staple. They're like real thin, crispy.
Is that the name though? Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about.
They're like
what,
this big.
What,
they're
is
real...
the name actually pancake though?
Yeah,
or is a different
a scallion
name?
Pancake. I mean, okay. That's what I know it as.
You actually have to like chop up the scallions?
Chop up the scallions and make the dough.
Ooh, have you go with sour cream? What in the heck?
Sure would. Lord.
Get some breakstones.
Sure would be.
The goat sour cream is breakstones, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
You know that?
Yeah. Give it a shot.
You never had breakstones before?
I don't think so.
What?
This is not the same level as you.
Because it's thicker than the regular whatever that there's
like a strained sour cream.
Oh, it's thick and chunky. It doesn't go bad like in like a week like the other one does. Like you know, it gets all. You know,
I do love sour cream. It's delicious stuff.
Fucking starving. I've been fasting.
All
God
right,
damn
we're
it.
Out of here.
That's it for the podcast. I'm gonna fucking deep fry a pierogi or two now with some sour cream.
Food time.
All right. See you later.